Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. So, you want to do nails, trim trees, have a massage therapy business. Good for you, but you better check to see if you need a license to operate in your state before you open the doors to customers. One in five Americans now needs a license to do his or her job. From hair braiding to plumbing, it's complicated. There are fees and training requirements, not to mention the hassle if you're moving to a different state. Supporters say it's all about quality control. Critics say big government overreach. This hour on Point, regulating who can do what jobs. You can join us on air or online. Have you tried to get a license? What happened? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Washington is Henry Kerr, U.S. economics editor at The Economist. You can link to his piece headlined, Occupational Licensing Blunts Competition and Boosts Inequality. That's at our website, onpointradio.org. Henry, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Jane. Good to be here.
So how many Americans actually need a license to work, to do their jobs?
Well, according to the latest data, it's about 22%, and that's up from about 5% in 1950. Now, that shift gradually over time, over the decades, partly reflects the fact that more and more Americans have started working in service industries and fewer in manufacturing, and service industries tend to have more licenses. But it also reflects lobbyists successfully campaigning to get their industries licensed.
So in some states, florists, taxidermists, interior designers, even fortune tellers need licenses to operate. Help us understand how licensing laws vary from state to state.
Sure. So you're right. The list goes on and on. Another example is tour guides, which are licensed in some states. These requirements can vary significantly. It can run from a requirement that you just register with the state. So that's very common, for instance, with Uber drivers and ride-sharing drivers, that they register and pay a fee. But it might also involve taking an exam, which requires study. It might involve a mandatory kind of minimum hours of study. So, for instance, in nine states, bartenders require a license. But the list goes on. And one way that you can tell that a lot of these licenses probably are superfluous is the fact that there are, in fact, 1,100 occupations which are regulated in at least one state, but only 60 of those occupations are regulated everywhere. So were these licenses crucial, you would expect something to be going wrong in bars in those states that don't license bartending, say, or something's going wrong in those states that don't license interior designers. But it doesn't really seem to. So there's a great long list, and it basically just varies depending on the political circumstances in each state and how successfully various occupations manage to campaign to have a license implemented.
Mm. So under President Trump, the Federal Trade Commission has created a task force to lobby against licensing laws at state levels. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, the Federal Trade Commission has actually for some time been campaigning or advising states to be careful with occupational licenses. The last case on licensing to reach the Supreme Court in 2015, that concerned dentists in North Carolina, and that came out of an FTC action. Under the Trump administration, they're making a renewed effort to make licensing a significant issue. And it's partly because there's been a kind of gradual realization over the last few years that this is a problem and increasingly a big feature of the labor market. So it's also the case that President Obama's economists wrote a long report summarizing the evidence on licensing that was quite skeptical. A lot of the policy is at the state level. So the federal government mainly kind of plays an advisory role, and sometimes, in the case of the FTC, may bring an antitrust action if they think that a licensing board is acting anti-competitively. Mm. That's what happened with the dentist. But a lot of the policy is done at the state level. But people at the federal level who are searching for reasons that the economy hasn't, in recent years, at least, been growing as fast as you would expect, who have noted that fewer workers are moving between states, who have noted that productivity growth has slowed down. As they search for reasons that this might be the case, licensing has attracted more attention. And obviously, deregulation is a big part of President Trump's agenda.
So,
it fits in with that.
They point to licensing as a reason the economy hasn't grown as strongly as they might have hoped.
I don't think anyone would say that it's the only thing going on, mm-hmm. but there are numerous trends that leads economists and policymakers in general to think that America's economy has become less dynamic. So, for instance, fewer firms are started than used to be started. As I said, fewer workers move across state lines. And then since the financial crisis, productivity growth has been weak. And licensing is among the kind of number of explanations that are put forward for why those trends might be happening.
So you write in The Economist, I'm just looking at the list here. I mean, 41 states license makeup artists, 13 states license bartending. You talk about the broader effect, though, on educated workers. Can you tell us briefly about that?
Sure. So often when you discuss licensing, it's easy to point to the jobs at the lower end of the skills distribution because that's where licensing seems most obviously unnecessary. But licensing is actually a bigger phenomenon at the top end of the income distribution among educated workers. So among those with postgraduate degrees, almost half of people have licenses. And there you're talking about doctors, you're talking about lawyers, dentists. And the economic evidence shows that the result of licensing is bigger for these people. They say see a bigger rise in their wages than your bartenders or your interior designers or people at the middle or lower end of the skills distribution would. So that's where licensing is having its biggest effect. It's also probably where the issue is most controversial, because although most people, I think, can see that licensing has run away and got out of hand with these long lists of jobs like tour guides that require licenses, typically the debate has been somewhat more controversial over doctors and lawyers and people at the high end of the income distribution.
We'll get to that in just a minute. Let me bring in a small business owner here, a small business woman who's been impacted. Let me go to Jacksonville, Arkansas. Nivea Earle, owner of the natural hair care business called Twisty Kinks. She sued Arkansas to be able to braid hair without a cosmetology license, prompting the state to change the law. Nivea, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane.
So You've been braiding hair most of your life. Tell us what happened when you tried to turn your passion into a business.
I've been braiding for about 18 years now, and I love hair braiding. You know, it's something that I have been taught, you know, growing up, and it's a part of my heritage and my legacy, you know. And I had been braiding in home for quite some time, and I got to a point to where I decided, you know, I want to do this full time. Instead of just doing this in my home, I would like to venture out and start a business and, you know, provide to the economy and everything. And I went out and got a storefront to have my braiding salon. But I wasn't aware at the time, when I was going through all the proper paperwork and getting the licenses and everything, that I had to have a cosmetology license in order for me to braid hair. And so when I got ready to contact the cosmetology board and ask them about, you know, the licensing and if they taught hair braiding and things of that nature, mm-hmm. they didn't include that in their curriculum. Mm. And it's like thousands of dollars for a cosmetology license on top of at least 1,500 hours that you have to take to get a cosmetology license. And they don't teach you hair braiding at all.
Mm. So what did you do, Nivea? What steps did you take?
Well, I contacted the Institute for Justice, and when I contacted the Institute for Justice, they came and sat in at the cosmetology meeting to see, you know, what exactly was going on with the process of hair braiding being included in the cosmetology mm-hmm. curriculum and mm-hmm. everything else. And when the Institute for Justice realized that, okay, well, you know, this is something that we can take on, they assisted me and Ms. McLean in being able to get the laws changed in the state of Arkansas so that hair braiders can have the opportunity to provide a stable foundation, a salon for people to go to get their hair braided.
And so, as I understand it, 14 other states have taken your lead, Arkansas's lead, and have exempted braiders from licensing. Must feel like a victory to you. You really stepped up here.
Yes. It is very, very exciting, you know, and it's very overwhelming to see so many other states that are taking on this issue of occupational licensing, especially in regards to hair braiding. And I am aware that there are many occupations that have licensing issue, and hair braiding is just one of those, but it definitely needs to be addressed. And I think all states especially need to address hair braiding, especially because if I ever needed to move, I would like to be able to go to a state and start my establishment in another state without worrying about the infringement of the cosmetology board.
But when we're just not talking about hair braiders here, we're talking about florists, we're talking about interior decorators, we're talking about bartenders. I mean, the cost is prohibitive to get a license. It's also all sorts of classes that you have to take. As you mentioned, I mean, has this impacted other small business owners that you know of?
Yes, this occupational licensing has impacted hair braiders. It's impacted Uber drivers, like Mr. Kerr was saying earlier. You know, it affects a lot of occupations here, you know, not only in the state of Arkansas, but many others. Mm-hmm.
Well, Nivia Earle, owner of the natural hair care business Twisty Kinks, thank you very much for joining me today, and good luck.
Oh, thank you.
Henry Kerr, what do you hear in Nivia's story there?
Yes, well, I think that's reflective of a lot of what happens at the state level, that people run up against these barriers to entrepreneurship, to starting your own business, and have to deal with these licensing requirements first. I think it shows also that it is possible to campaign against them and have licensing requirements overturned, but it's not always easy, and it can only happen on a kind of occupation-by-occupation basis, one at a time.
I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Join me on NPR's Ask Me Another as we challenge contestants and celebrities to nerdy word games, music parodies, and ponderful trivia. Find us every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and we're discussing occupational licensing this hour, the rules that regulate who can do what jobs. And you can join the conversation. Are there too many hoops to jump through if you simply want to work? Do you want to make sure that you get good quality service from a licensed professional? Should that be your choice? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. In Phoenix, Arizona, lawmakers have introduced a bill that would allow hairstylists to shampoo, condition, and style hair without training or licensing. Here's professional hairstylist Teekcha Lambert arguing why deregulation in her industry is not a good thing.
What this license is in place for is to be able to train people so that they know how to properly do things. We do sanitation, the structure of hair, how to use our tools properly. When you don't have a license, you're not accountable for anything or to anybody.
I'm speaking this hour with Henry Kerr, U.S. economics editor at The Economist. And joining me now from Washington is Shoshana Weissman, policy analyst and digital strategist at the think tank, the R Street Institute. You can link to her piece headlined, Why Do You Need a College Degree to Give Diet Advice? That is at our website, onpointradio.org. Shoshana, welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you just heard that professional hairstylist there in Phoenix saying, you know, what a license does is trains people, helps train them to do their jobs properly. And when you don't have a license, you're not accountable to anybody for anything. What's your response to that?
So there's a couple of things. I think one thing is they're accountable to their customers. If they do a bad job and their customers don't like it, whether or not they're licensed, then they're going to go somewhere else. And even if they are licensed, you know, or if people want to go to someone who is licensed, they always have that choice. And I encourage them to do what makes them feel comfortable. That said, I don't think you need a license in order to do things like curl hair. I mean, I actually have about 7 colors in my hair right now, and I do it all myself since I was about 12 years old. I've gotten better at it over time, but these are things that one can safely do at home, can safely learn. And her arguments, I hope she's concerned about health and safety. I understand that. But these are things that moms do for their kids all the time. And it's been done safely across the country for years. It's not licensed everywhere. And there's places like Dry Bar where people will get blowouts. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those people aren't licensed, but they do it safely. And I have friends who love that place.
Yeah, so it's not just hair products, hair professionals we're talking about here. It's across the board. Taxidermists, fortune tellers, I mean, you name it, and they need to be licensed. So to your mind, licenses make it harder to enter a profession. Is that right?
Absolutely. And of course, there's cases where it's necessary. Again, doctors and certain other professions, even though there might be room to reduce licensing a little bit, you know, making sure nurses can do their jobs and everything they're qualified mm-hmm. to. But when it comes to painting nails, when it comes to florists, I mean, the stories there can be tragic, the effect it has on people's lives. In Arizona, there's one case that really broke my heart. There's this really sweet man. His name was Juan Carlos. He was actually in cosmetology school, and he was cutting hair for the homeless because he had been homeless before. The cosmetology board cracked down on him, tried to ruin his future in cosmetology, all because he was cutting hair for homeless without a license. And if it wasn't for the governor stepping in and protecting him, Doug Ducey has been a really big advocate for licensing reform. I don't know what would have happened to him.
Duncan writes on Twitter, I believe licensing should apply to industries that require a degree of safety. As an arborist and propane delivery driver, I have to be licensed for both. Isn't that a good standard to uphold, Shoshana Weissman?
Absolutely. I'm a very big advocate of keeping licensing where health and safety are involved. I think that's really important. Sometimes maybe there's less burdensome ways, like a health and safety certificate, other less burdensome training. I think a big problem is in the cosmetology field in particular, they make people go through a full cosmetology school to do things they already know how to do rather than just training them on health and safety. And some people argue it's an art. And of course, I agree. I'm a very big advocate of that, too. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you need school to learn that art. And I think when it comes to health and safety, that has to come first. And the arguments about it have to be real. Like the florist case in Louisiana, they were making these absurd arguments saying that you have to be worried about infected dirt. What if the stems aren't cut right and a bride is holding her bouquet and she trips and falls? I mean, all these things that really weren't about health or safety. So when those things are real and they have substantial arguments, I'm all there. But when they're not and they're just trying to invent reasons so they can keep the licensing, that's where I get concerned.
Henry Kerr, is that really at the heart of this? I mean, these boards, as I understand them, the state-appointed boards that issue licenses are full of industry insiders who, critics say, want to restrict competition.
Yes, I think the problem is that any industry that campaigns for a license will typically come up with a health and safety consumer protection justification for it. And certainly at the in complicated areas like health, it's difficult for people who aren't experts to actually judge whether it's necessary or not. So that allows the people who benefit from licensing, because it shields them from competition, to write the rules. But it's also true for the lower skill professions that people will say there's a health and safety case. I think ultimately, that should be a concern. It is a proper concern, but it's not always the case that you need a license to protect health and safety. So, for instance, every time you eat in a restaurant or a cafeteria, it's very important that your food's been prepared safely and that you're not going to get food poisoning. Does that really mean that it's the business of government to kind of set up a compulsory exam for every chef and waiter? Or could they do something lighter touch, like having random inspections, issuing certificates, say you've got a health and safety rating from the government, which you could then put on the door and let the consumer decide how important that is and let the market regulate health and safety that way. Licensing is a very kind of intrusive way of ensuring standards because it stops entry and innovation by other people who want to come in and do things a bit differently and experiment with new business models.
Let's get John in here from Washington Courthouse, Ohio. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi, Jane.
Hi, go ahead.
The reason I'm calling it is that I am a commercial driver. There are various licenses and endorsements that you need for various tasks in our profession. And they do ensure not only safety, but I think they also keep wages up, because ultimately you don't want somebody without experience jumping into one of these trucks, but we don't want to compete with them. Hmm. It is one of the most heavily regulated industries. It does bound to become a daunting task if you do want to become an independent owner-operator for a commercial vehicle. But in the end, it boils down to safety, at least in our industry.
John, thank you. Henry Kerb, and John speaks to the safety issue, but he also brings up wages. How does licensing affect wages?
Well, there's substantial evidence that occupational licensing does, in fact, boost wages. He's right that, you know, if you restrict entry into an industry, it will keep up the wages of those who are in the industry and don't have to compete with the new entrants. Most of the studies find that the boost to wages is something in the region of 10 to 15%, but it varies a lot. Now, of course, that boost to wages is at the expense of both the people who are kept out of the industry and are unable to compete, unable to get a job in that industry, and at the expense of the consumer who wants to make use of the services on offer. So it's far from clear that that's a good thing for society, as opposed for the good people, a good thing for the people who are protected and benefit.
John, thanks so much for the call. Let me bring in now from Wilton, Iowa, Bobby Kaufman, a Republican state representative in Iowa. He made headlines for tearing up a bill in committee hearing last year that would have removed licensure requirements. Representative Kaufman, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
So you quite literally ripped up a bill that would have removed these requirements for licensing in your state. Tell us why you did that.
I did rip up the bill as a showcase to the people that were there that had taken the day off of work. It was the biggest subcommittee, public subcommittee, that I've ever had. There was one individual in the room that supported the bill, and there were hundreds that did not. And you know, we are a true citizen legislature here in Iowa. We are part-time. We go back home on the weekends. And of all of the bills that we did last year in a historically conservative session, that bill got more opposition from individual calls, emails, and texts than the next three controversial bills combined.
In fact, you told the Des Moines Register that there is, quote, zero appetite in this state for removing licensure. Tell me what your constituents are saying. What are they telling you? What do they want?
Well, one of the biggest flaws in the bill really goes along with the theme that I've been listening with some of your other guests so far, and that is that it dove into the health and safety portion of occupancy. You're talking about mental health counselors, respiratory therapists, deep muscle tissue massage therapists, and my constituents, and I believe the people of the state of Iowa, have an expectation that when it does come to health, when it does come to safety, that licensure gives a level of expectations that prevents bad actors from falsely advertising.
And yet, does it cross the line when you have to license a makeup artist or a bartender or a florist? Do you understand that argument?
Absolutely. And I have said I am more than open to a licensure discussion that does not involve the health industry, that does not involve safety. And I also believe that that conversation could be successful in the state. But the bill that we had last year was all encompassing and really dove into the heart of some very important healthcare professions that I just could not support.
Let me get another call in here. Jody is in Delray Beach, Florida. Hi, Jody. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting. I am technically, well, in different states I'm called different things, but in this state I would be called a licensed mental health counselor. So I am all for the health and safety pieces, you know, of licensure. My experience has been such that I came across state lines with a license in another state, that state being the state of North Carolina, expecting what we call licensure by endorsement to be a simplistic sort of process. Well, lo and behold, it has not been in the state of Florida. The state of Florida, we have to submit all sorts of, literally, paperwork, all of our CUs, our educational requirements, all of that to our licensing boards. And the licensing board makes the final decision if they will give you a license in this state. Again, there should be some degree of licensure reciprocity. That's the whole reason why they call it licensure by endorsement. And I came from another state and was granted licensure by endorsement in the state of North Carolina.
So it's a great point, Jody, and I'm going to jump in because I want to get Shoshana Weissman back in here. You hear Jody talking about licensure reciprocity and many workers who discover that you can't move from state to state. You can't pick up your work and move next door because these licensure laws don't hold.
Yeah, that's a really big problem. And I think even further than that, a big problem is when it's licensed under a different name in a different state or under a different kind of structure. So when you move from one state to another, you could be out of a job. And understandably, that's a really, really big problem for military spouses. There's a couple of states, and actually the Labor Secretary Acosta is working with South Dakota to kind of work with other states and get them on the same page. Florida actually does have some legislation focused on this right now that would make it a little bit easier. It wouldn't fix everything, but I think it's going in the right direction. Part of the danger, too, is while reforming licensing, you don't want to make it so so the licenses that shouldn't be there to begin with will go between states, because then if you go from one state to another and it wasn't licensed where you're coming from and it is where you're going to, that's still a problem. So that's a really complex aspect of the whole problem. And I'm not sure that the federal government stepping in to do a ton is the solution either. But it's frustrating to hear stories like this where someone was practicing their profession perfectly fine and they move to a state and they can't do it anymore.
You mentioned that this is a particular burden on military families. Here's Heather Kosich del Castillo. She's a health coach in California. After she moved to Florida, she was barred from conducting her business because of the state's licensing laws. Heather explained what it would take to get licensed in Florida in a video for the Institute of Justice, the law firm that took up her case. Here's that.
To be licensed in the state of Florida, I would need a bachelor's degree in health on top of the bachelor's and master's degree I already have, a 900-hour internship, and to pass a board-certified exam. I just can't pursue getting licensed in the state of Florida because the requirements are just too lengthy and too financially burdensome. We're a military family. We may only live in Florida another 2 years.
So, Shoshana, you've said that 35 to 50% of military spouses work in a profession that require licensure. So it's a particular burden for them.
Absolutely. It's really frustrating. And Heather's case is also frustrating because she moved from a state where it wasn't licensed in the same way to a state where it was heavily licensed. And for her, just being a nutritionist involved normal things, just talking about eating healthy, working with her clients to figure out what they could be doing better with their diets. Mm-hmm. And that's actually a license that works in various ways in different states. Some it's very heavily licensed. In others, you just have to clarify that you're not licensed and that's okay. And there's different standards. But for her, her husband's serving the country and the various states are making it harder for her to earn a living. And that's actually had a really big effect on our military. I've seen a lot of military spouses reach out about it, and it's so frustrating to think that that's happening. And it also highlights why we have to have licensing reform for things that ought not be licensed in the first place.
I was just going to have Representative Kaufman jump here. We have about a minute left. What about that, Representative Kaufman? Licensure burdens for military families and those that are trying to move state to state?
Well, we did just pass, this is a timely conversation, we did just pass a bill in state government last month that did reciprocity recognition for physical therapists. So certainly I empathize with a military family that does not have a choice, that has to move somewhere because of a changing of the base. But as far as individual families and people that are choosing to move, I guess I don't see government's role. I think that should be a factor, just like the school district of the possible state you're moving to, just like the economic condition of the state you're moving to. I mean, I think that's just a family decision that's factored in.
Henry Kerr, how do you see it?
Well, I certainly feel for the people who are in the situation where they move around and find it difficult for their spouses to work. I mean, I think people should be entitled to a certain amount of economic liberty and ability to practice their profession. And it's possible that government can regulate too harshly in these areas. And if they are, the state government should look at that rather than saying, well, it's just the individual's choice if they move here.
Russell writes in an email, follow the money. Who is getting the license fee? This is a great way to raise money for states and professional organizations. Representative Kaufman, is that true? Is your state making money on licensing?
Well, there's different avenues for the money. Some avenues go to the actual industry themselves to promote it, while some do indeed go to the general fund. But I don't believe that having a fee to be able to obtain licensure it should be a prohibitive discussion. I think that you can talk about where the money should go. You can talk about whether you should cut off with health care and safety, and I'm open to that discussion. I just really believe that last year's bill was faulty, something my constituents didn't support, and something I didn't support.
Before we get back to the show, we'd like to ask you about you. That's right. We want to learn more about our listeners with a short survey. It's anonymous and easy. Just go to wbur.org/survey to complete the survey right now. That's wbur.org/survey. This survey will be tremendously helpful to us. So thanks.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing licensing requirements across this country, how they protect consumers and how they restrict workers. Is requiring a license for a florist or an athletic trainer necessary? Is that government overreach? What if everyone put up a shingle without having a license? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm speaking this hour with Henry Kerr, U.S. economics editor at The Economist, Shoshana Weissman, policy analyst and digital media specialist at the R Street Institute, and Bobby Kaufman, Republican from Iowa. He's a state representative there. I wanted to play this. This is a clip from economist Milton Friedman speaking in 1978 on the drawbacks of medical licensing requirements.
Nobody can become a physician unless he is licensed to be a physician by a government licensing board. Now I ask you, who do you suppose is competent to decide who should be a physician? Only other physicians. So the membership of licensing boards of medical groups is always composed of physicians. And that has, in fact, been a key element in the restriction of entry into medicine and in keeping the number of physicians to a lower level than it otherwise would have been.
Occupational licensing has been a topic of debate for quite a while. In January, Colorado lawmakers passed the Enhanced Nurse Licensure Compact. It's a bill allowing nurses to cross state lines to work. Aside from reducing regulatory paperwork and costs, director of the Colorado Nurses Association, Colin Casper, argued that the bill also opens the door to telehealth treatment and providing aid in natural disasters.
Recently, we had many Colorado nurses go into the state of Texas to help during the hurricane and the massive care needs that were needed in the hospitals there. The compact license allows that to happen very efficiently.
Representative Kaufman, what about that? What about that in your state, about crossing state lines and the necessity for some licensures to have reciprocity?
Well, like I said, we did pass a reciprocity bill recently for physical therapists, and so I do think there's a level of expectation. But the first caller's notion that somehow we shouldn't have licensure for medical professions because it's comprised only, I mean, that's just ridiculous. People have an expectation of a basic minimum when it comes to what you have to do to be able to say, I'm a, quote, doctor, I'm a physical therapist, I'm a mental health counselor. And to not have any sort of a minimum standard like that, that is just ridiculous and frankly dangerous that people could be setting up shops with little to no credentials and falsely advertising. That's not the public's job to try to root out shysters. That is the role of government.
Isn't that right, Shoshana Weissman?
Of course, I'd agree there, and I think there is room for licensing reform within the medical profession, but I don't think we should de-license doctors. I admire Milton Friedman greatly, but I think that's one area where he might have been a little bit off.
Let me get Eddie in here from Miami, Florida. Hi, Eddie.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
I'm a real estate professional, and I think that a lot of the conversation has been about physical health and well-being of the consumers, but licensing should definitely cover anybody that can put somebody's nest egg or any sort of financial future into jeopardy. It's basic, and I agree that, you know, the public has to have a basic understanding and acceptance that the state is overlooking certain groups of people to make sure that they're not there just for a quick buck, and they're going to skip town the moment that, you know, something goes wrong.
Eddie, thanks very much for the call there from Miami. Let's go to Lynn, Massachusetts. Jake is on the line. Hi, Jake.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you, Jim. I just want to make a comment, and I also got something about. It's a, I went out and got myself a hoisting license, and that's to operate heavy equipment machinery.
Okay.
Now, this is a over $600 I spent getting this license.
Mm-hmm.
And I went out, tried to apply for jobs, nothing. I got a job about six months ago, and I'm walking around, and I see a lot of people operating the machines. And I'm asking around, I say, what's up? Well, how long you have your license? And none of them have license.
Mm.
None.
Mm.
So now I ask, wait a minute. So I call the board and say, how is it that people operating without a license? I mean, I spend all this money. And they go, oh, well, if the place, only one person might need the license to cover everybody else.
Mm.
But an instructor will have to come every 6 months or every 4 months to verify.
Mm.
Now,
Jake, I'm going to jump in. Shoshana Weissman, I mean, Jake's story is really interesting. He spends $600 for a license, goes to find a job, can't get it, and sees other hoisting operators, no license at all.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are certain professions where just one or two people there might have to have a license, and not everyone else is required to. So, I mean, they should have told him that up front, of course, before he went and spent all that money. But I hope that it benefits him in his career. But yeah, I think that's just a case of the board maybe should have just given him more information so he understood fully what he was getting into.
Representative Bobby Kaufman, what about the argument that it's often the practitioners themselves who regulate these professions in an effort to restrict competition? Is there a concern to your mind about stifling competition?
I think that's a concern, but I think that it's something that each individual state can put some sort of a safeguard, whether it be a complaint line or some sort of a formal request. If you see anybody acting nefariously, they can be held accountable. But I also wanted to note the caller from Miami made an excellent point that I would add along with safety and healthcare, that anybody that could put someone's financial nest egg in jeopardy should also be someone. It's all about accountability, so that someone cannot completely ruin someone and then skip town without any sort of retrospect.
Mm. Henry Kerr, what about that, the notion of stifling competition?
So I think that that's the main cost of licensing, is that you do perhaps gain real gains in terms of consumer protection, but you're trading off against stifling competition. I wanted to pick up on the point about financial services. I mean, I think this is one of the areas where the case for licensing is very strong indeed. You wouldn't want someone with, say, a fraud conviction being in charge of someone else's investments. And so the state has a very strong grounds for regulating in that area. But to go back to medicine, sometimes these consumer protection examples aren't as obvious as they seem. So, for instance, there is no license that's required to conduct neurosurgery, to conduct brain surgery beyond simply being a doctor. We regulate that. We make sure that brain surgeons are properly qualified entirely privately, by whom hospitals decide to hire through private credentials, not through the government saying among doctors only this group can be brain surgeons. And that seems to do the job fine. So I do think there are these cases where the consumer protection argument is very strong, but it's not always as obvious as it may seem.
Aaron from our Facebook page says, most licensing is to protect a certain individual or group of businesses from competition. It's often anti-competitive, but not always. Sometimes it's because the state wants to ensure a particular industry remains economically viable and is not undercut by cheap knockoffs, so to speak, flooding the market. Matt says, most of us have to go to school for 4 years for our profession. So you're telling me if someone really wanted to get into a profession, they can't take a few hours of training or a test? Maybe you're just weeding out the unmotivated. And from our Twitter feed, can you discuss the disparity in licensing requirements for violent occupations? Rural states have no licenses for bounty hunters, for example, or bodyguards. Shoshana Weissman, what about that?
You know, I actually haven't looked very deeply into that, but I mean, to my knowledge, at least, there's no epidemic of bodyguards being really terrible to people or harming people. If that were the case, that could be something. But to my knowledge, that's not an issue I've ever heard about. And I know for a lot of hunting type things, it's not always a licensing board as much as it is the environmental agency in the state figuring out if there's a shortage of certain animals and they need to protect them, or if there's too many of them. Even in my backyard in D.C., I'll always see signs up saying that they're hunting deer for population control.
Bob is in Townsend, Vermont. Hi, Bob. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. Go ahead.
I'm a safety professional, and it's ironic, but you're talking about occupational licensing, and the health and safety seems to be a key concern.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the safety profession itself is unregulated, meaning that there's no requirement for education, continuing education, ethics, or code of conduct. I helped introduce a bill in New York State in the late 90s, 98, I believe. It's been reintroduced ever since, but has not yet passed. And I don't know of a single state where safety professionals are regulated or licensed.
Henry Kerr, what do you know about that?
Well, I haven't looked into that industry specifically. I think what I want to know to know whether or not that's an industry that should be regulated is what's been going wrong as a result of unregulated safety professionals. It's not something that I've heard about there being, you know, rogue safety professionals who are leaving dissatisfied clients. So I think you really have to show the harm that justifies the license.
Bob, thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Sydney in Arnold, Maryland. Hi, Sydney. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. I called in because I feel like I've seen this from both sides of the spectrum, because I am a business owner, but then also as a consumer, I disagree with what your guest said earlier about how it's not the responsibility of the consumer to try to find out whether or not someone is licensed. Because when I was looking to get my daughter's ears pierced, for example, I made sure that I looked up a tattoo parlor that had someone who is licensed by a nationally recognized organization, because they have higher standards for quality of care. And I felt like that was really important to me, to make sure that the person that I was working with was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as a business owner, I see that even though I have a license, there are other people in my same business who don't, who, like the first guest that you had, who was talking about hair braiding. She didn't know she needed a license. She didn't have a license. So I don't feel like saying, this particular state has a license for this profession, so therefore, you know, that keeps costs higher.
Mm-hmm.
You still have those other people undercutting costs who maybe don't know how to run a proper business. And for my profession in particular, there's no way for consumers to find out whether or not I'm even licensed that I know of, or it doesn't seem like there is, based on the fact that there are so many other photographers around me who aren't licensed and are still doing business. And nobody.
It's a good point, Sydney. It really is. Let me get Richard in here from Sarasota, Florida. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Hi, dear. Jane, I'm an electrical contractor,
okay.
Licensed, unlimited license, and state certified. Ours definitely has to do with the safety of what we do. The part on reciprocity in different states in my business is we have to follow what's called the National Electric Code. And that's a toothless tiger, because you have authorities having jurisdiction, which means every entity I work in, city, whatever, might have different laws, or the authority there can impose their other things. In our trade, if we could get to where we could follow the minimum, which that's what the National Electric Code is, the mm-hmm. minimum safety, mm-hmm. and go up above it and have it throughout the United States where you have to pass the test. And Florida is one of the most stringent states, us in California, actually.
Richard, thank you. Henry Kerr, speak to Richard's point and the sort of the gradations of licensure out there, state to state.
Sure. Well, the difficulty comes, of course, when states decide that they want to have licensure at a different gradation. The trade-off here is, you know, ideally you might want those requirements to be the same in every state. You might want everyone to agree on what the minimum is. That, of course, requires action at a more centralized level. So you're trading off the how easily the licensing regime can work with kind of the intervention from federal government, essentially.
Brian is in Atlanta, Georgia. Hi, Brian. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Jane. I guess my quick question would be, I know we're focusing on what state laws can do, but what about professional boards? Like, for instance, occupational therapy just voted to make the degree go from master's to doctorate, and then have the occupational therapy assistants have two-year programs mm-hmm. go to four-year colleges, increasing the cost and time.
So the question is, how do we make these boards, how do we hold them accountable? Representative Bobby Kaufman, what do you say to Brian in Atlanta?
Well, I would say that there certainly needs to be an avenue for the bad actors that would try to punish entries. But I think that's, I think in my state at least, that is the exception, not the norm, because we have a very robust complaint system. We have an ombudsman's office which investigates those complaints. And I actually chair the oversight committee that is responsible for going after them. And I can tell you from my perspective, from my committee in my state, anybody that acts like that, I'm going after them.
Shoshana Weissman, we just have about a minute left here. Do licensing laws affect some populations, some demographics more than others, to your mind? And is that a concern?
Well, I think they affect everyone, but I do think that it has a really hard impact on the people who don't have a lot of money, because that's really the first step up into, you know, increasing their prosperity. So when a hair braider has to go get a license, or when a florist has to go get a license, they're not starting out with a lot, and they're trying to bring themselves up. It's a little bit easier when you have a lot more money or when you have a lot more experience. But while it affects everyone, I think that the impact on the poor and the middle class is particularly acute.
Henry Kurt, from your reporting, is that your takeaway?
Yes, it's certainly true that the people who are blocked from getting into professions at the lower end of the income distribution are the most obvious concentrated victims of licensing. But it's also worth saying that if licensing is stopping the economy as a whole from functioning well, then that's really a kind of tax on everyone.
A really interesting conversation, something we don't talk about often, but important nonetheless. Henry Kerr, U.S. economics editor at The Economist. Thanks for your reporting and your time today, Henry. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Shoshana Weissman, policy analyst and digital strategist at the R Street Institute. Shoshana, thanks to you.
Thank you.
And Bobby Kaufman, Republican, Iowa State Representative. We're glad you're with us today, Bobby. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Continue the conversation, listeners, and get our On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.